Hello and welcome to this week's Extra Time podcast. It's part three of our Rugby World Cup special. I'm Steve Luckin, Senior Sports Editor at The National. Joining me is my esteemed colleague, Paul Radley, one of our senior reporters. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Steve. And yourself?
Yes, can't complain. Absolutely loving this tournament so far. How about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely awesome. Obviously, but very soon into the tournament, probably the best result ever. Sorry to say that for South Africans, but best result ever for rugby with the Japan-South Africa games. It's just made the tournament, whatever happens from here on in.
I think it's fair to say it's the greatest World Cup already, isn't it? No matter what happens from here on in.
Definitely. Just judged on the fact that it's such a memorable game, but one that's hopefully going to be a watershed in terms of separating the old rugby world order from the new one, and creating a new one where sides, you know, you don't go into matches thinking it's a foregone conclusion, which has often been a failing of Rugby World Cups in the past.
Yeah, I mean, well, in case there are any people out there who've been living under a rock with fingers in both ears, Japan obviously pulled off, like you said, the biggest shock ever, beating the mighty South Africa, two-time winners, 34-32. Literally the last touch of the ball, the last move of the match, scoring in the corner, 34-32. It was absolutely epic, and it's reflected in Heinicke Meyer's thinking for the Samoa game. So he's rung the changes. I'm surprised to see Victor Matfield and Jean de Villiers survive the call.
Yeah, he's stuck with the oldies, like you say, and brought in an oldie at number nine as well. So he seems to be, it was a criticism of the team before the tournament started that he was too reliant on experience and a conservative game plan. Yet, in the wake of that that major scandal for South African sport, that they lost this shock game to Japan, he's stuck with it, and if anything, gone even further down that road.
Well, this will be the most experienced team ever to take a field. I think it's 830 international caps between them.
Yeah. I don't know whether the fact that there's eight changes to the team suggests that perhaps they underestimated Japan in the first game, and this was always going to be his ideal starting team for this match, which, if you looked at, on paper, at the group at the start, this would have probably looked like being their toughest game. So perhaps there's that, or maybe it is just eight changes, eight guys being dropped because they weren't good enough in that game, which they obviously lost.
Exactly. And they're not the only team that have made changes. New Zealand, the All Blacks, they've dropped quite a few players. That not a complete shock, I guess you would say, for a team, no disrespect of Namibia's standing. In comes Sam Kane as captain. We've got Sonny Bill Williams starting. What do you make of those?
Yeah, really, it must be really tough bringing your second string team in, and you've got Sonny Bill Williams, Sam Kane's captain, and they just to make sure that they get over the line, they've kept in Nihi Milne-Scudder and Sevier and
Sam White. Look, the agony of choice,
They should stumble through, I'd have thought, with that lineup.
Just about. And Jacques Berger, the Namibia captain, he'll obviously take inspiration from the Japan result, but you would think a bridge too far for the Namibians.
Oh, absolutely. They're very different. I think his point was the fact that, you know, miracles happen and upsets can happen. But Japan are a very highly professional, well-run team, and they have been for quite a long time. Namibia aren't that. They qualified for the World Cup with a mostly amateur setup. There's guys like you said, Jacques Berger, the captain himself, who's had a brilliant club career in the professional game, most recently with Saracens. There are the odd player like that, but basically the guys are amateurs. I think some of them are farmers and things like that. And they're putting them up against the best side in the world by, you know, quite a distance. Probably a fairy tale story for them would be if they managed to keep it to less than 50 points, I'd have thought, the margin of defeat.
I think that's being generous to them as well, mate. But yeah, no, I see what you mean. And it'd be great to see all these teams. And, you know, another result that probably got swept under the carpet in the wake of the Japan result was Georgia winning their opening game. They take on Argentina. That's on Friday. Argentina going from the 90,000 fans at Wembley to what is a relatively low 16,000 at King's Home. Do you think there's a danger the Pumas could be underestimating Georgia?
Well, it's good. Definitely going to be a bit of a come down, isn't it, from playing against, you know, steeling yourself to play against, like we just said, the World's Best Team, the All Blacks, in incredible, it looked like it was a pulsating atmosphere at Wembley Stadium, probably the most famous sports ground in the world, perhaps not so much associated with rugby, but 90,000 people there, and then they go down to little old King's Home, a very close ground with a fantastic rugby heritage, and always, certainly when Gloucester, the club that play their home games there, are playing, it's always a brilliant atmosphere, and you'd have thought they'd be pulling for the underdog. So and Georgia played their first game there against Tonga and had success, so they could probably bank on a little bit of home, sort of adopted home following. So so that could even it up in one regard, but I can't see any other result than Argentina coasting in that one, because they're a very good team, and they might go quite deep into the tournament, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly pose the All Blacks enough problems. You know, at one point, you could argue they didn't go for the jugular enough. The All Blacks were down to 13 men for a period. Yet, like I said, they brought on the heavy artillery for the second half and managed to pull away for a fairly comfortable win. But Argentina are certainly a dark horse to watch in this tournament.
Yeah, I think exactly how you just described that performance, the way the All Blacks pulled away in the last, probably, well, the latter stages again, that just tends to be how the All Blacks, if they're not at their best and if they're not dominating teams, they still manage to get over the line by doing exactly how you just described it. So presumably they're fitter or hungrier or something than everybody else, as well as being, you know, when they're on their game, far more skilled. But yeah, Argentina certainly, they've got some brilliant players. Their midfield pairing is, I think, perhaps my favourite in the tournament. Marcelo Gosch and Juan Martin Hernandez is just, I think his nickname is actually the Magician, whatever the Spanish version.
Well, he is magic, isn't he?
He is.
They do have some great players all over the park. Let's talk about England-Wales now, Paul. Let's turn our attention to that. Jamie Joseph, the England centre, scored 4 tries in the Six Nations. He's been ruled out of this game with a chest injury. So, Owen Farrell, Sam Burgess, Barrett, who's going to start?
Well, all of them, apparently. Sounds a bit one-dimensional, though. No George Ford. Obviously, Farrell's a very reliable player. But obviously, UK's got less creative spark than George Ford, and the same with the other two. They're probably good. Burgess and Brad Barrett are very good defensive players. Well, you assume it, that Burgess is a good defensive player because he's barely played any rugby union, but obviously he's a big, powerful tackler. They'll probably just both be on the crash ball, just be looking to stop the big players that are inevitably... Wales tend to play a game where they've got a lot of line breakers like who base their game on power, like Cuthbert and North on the wings, and then Jamie Roberts in the midfield. So it could be, you can see why a strong defensive midfield like that would be picked.
Sure.
Well.
Do you think that's why he's gone for Burgess over someone like Henry Slade, who's, you know, got bags of creativity, can bring his backs into the games, whereas Burgess is going to take the ball up and he's going to hit you?
Yeah, that seems to be the only sensible conclusion you can make from that, the reported changes to the team selection. It seems a little bit conservative and a little bit defensive, especially when, you know, Wales have had all these injury problems and England are still seem to be picking their team on the defensive mindset that, you know, these are Wales' strengths, so we better pick our team to combat that rather than,
The selection of Burgess, I think he makes such an impact off the bench. You know, we obviously talked about Sonny Bill Williams coming on, changing the attacking impetus, you know, straightening up the All Blacks line, punching holes in the defence, and that's Burgess's biggest strength, or at least that's all he's shown in his relatively short time in Union so far. I just wondered how he's going to fare from the off start. You know, where he's going to have to probe, he's going to have to try and second guess a real experienced old pro and a you know, Buzz Lightyear lookalike in Jamie Roberts. How he's going to come up against someone like that from the offset. I just can't see him winning that battle, can you?
No, I totally agree. Jamie Roberts, he's been around the block. Obviously, he's got a lot of skills and power and things like that. And perhaps in terms of raw material, Sam Burgess could match up to him if you just took what they were both good at on paper and looked at it. But Jamie Roberts has been a starter on the last two. He's been a first choice on the last two Lions tours. He's played a lot of rugby. He's played a lot of rugby for Wales. He knows what the game's all about. And Burgess, you cannot say that about him. He's played less than a year of union and none of it in the position that it will. Sorry, barely any of it in the position that he's playing against one of the world's. His exact opposite number will be one of the world's best in that position. So it seems tough to me. I'd have thought Barrett personally would have been a safer option.
Okay, mate. Well, Paul, it's been great speaking to you again, mate. I'm sure we'll catch up with you again next week. Let's hope we can report on some more shock results, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
Great. Okay, Paul. Take care. This podcast has been produced by Marwan Al-Hamadi of the Multimedia Desk. You can follow the Sports Desk on Twitter at NatSportUAE and keep up to date with all the Rugby World Cup stories at thenational.ae/sport.